Engage fluo injectors.
Engaging fluo injectors.
Fluo reactors at 80%, sir.
Fluo containment field is destabilizing.
Emergency fluo containment protocols now. All hands brace for impact.
Brace for impact in 3, 2, 1.
Hot diggity damn, we're back with another episode of World 1-1 Podcast. Quick tease on the third half of the show this week. We're talking about the industry-wide sweeping layoffs that have been happening everywhere and seemingly show no signs of stopping. Beyond that, a quick note, you can and should subscribe to our show if you're listening, if you haven't already, in your favorite podcatcher or on YouTube if you want the video version. And make sure you share with your friends if you enjoy this. And if you hate this, share this with somebody you don't like, but they don't know it yet. Just a way to secretly make them miserable in life. That's our gift to you, no matter what. Quick note too, you can and should jump into our Discord. There's a link in the show notes down below, and come chat with us. Come say hi. Shout out to our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors. Helping you up your scent game. More about them before the break. And let's dive right in, because
choose your fighter.
I am, as always, your host, Rald of the Wall. Joining me this week are my friends and my family. We've got Riker. You know, that's audio, right?
You know, that's
you're almost like, as bad as Michael. Mic. That's Michael.
I didn't
again.
Know what yeah. It was not. It doesn't work.
Can hear the head rattle. Though, in all fairness, with Michael, when he nods, you actually can hear his head rattle.
Sweet Jesus.
Well, no, he's got the tunnels, but then he's got the horseshoes through him, so you can hear the jingle.
Right.
Oh, that's fair.
It's like a rattle bait on a fishing line.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of great.
That's why I wear plugs. I've seen someone with like chains, like it looks like chain links, and I want a pair so bad.
Ooh, that sounds.
And there is my lovely wife Zoe.
Yo, what up?
And my right hand man, Josh the LeGrew.
Yep.
All right, let's dive right in with.
Oh my gosh!
Video games.
Riker, what have you been playing this week?
Mostly The Sims.
Yeah. How are your Sims?
Well,
are they simming right along?
You know, honestly, I'm not in love with the storyline that I'm doing right now. I kind of like the one I was doing before, but I accidentally killed all my Sims, so I had to start over.
Accidentally, huh? I'm sure the judge will believe that.
Yeah, well, you know, it was accidental on purpose.
You only set the house on fire after you removed all the doors and windows.
I wish I could set a house on fire. That'd be fantastic.
Sweet, for legal reasons, that is a joke. For legal reasons,
probably,
that is
maybe.
A joke.
It's The Sims.
I built maybe, a shed probably. In the backyard and let him starve.
It's like when I was describing Red Dead 2 to somebody at work, and I was like, I killed this guy, and then this guy, like, called the cops, and then I killed this guy.
Jesus.
All of these are jokes.
So what's our new story for these Sims that you don't like as much?
They're vampires. Okay. They're vampires, and I found out that if the kids grow up in the household, they're more likely to let my vampires feed on them. So I've started adopting the max amount of kids, and I dress them up as the child from The Mandalorian, and I have them worshiping a statue of The Mandalorian on the mantle in the living room. They got like the shoes and the hands and everything. And then when they hit like 16, 17, then I feed on them. And if they don't let me, I kick them out of the household. That's what I got going on right now.
Jesus. So I see that look on Zoe's face, and you're suddenly contemplating if you should be checking out The Sims, knowing that you can just have a whole vampire house. Because Zoe only has like the world's most hardcore fucking vampire fetish.
You know what? I blame my parents. They let me watch Blade when I was way too young, and Deacon Frost was way too sexy. Part of me feels sad that Deacon Frost was my first vampire crush, but then there's another part of me that's like, there are worse options.
Says the person that falls in love with every fictional red flag they can find on screen.
Okay, but same.
I'm not though. Supposed to do it in real life. That urge has to get out somewhere. Okay. Fuck off. How about you talk about what you've been playing? Let's just focus on that. What have you been playing, babe?
Well, we're not done
let's
yet.
Let's see.
Oh, we're not done? Sorry. I cut off Riker. Riker, do you have anything to add about what you've been playing?
Yeah, there's a pack I want. So I started playing. I play mostly on my PlayStation, but I found out on my PC I can have mods, and I now have good enough computer to do that. And so I've been playing with the mods, but I found out that there is a way to... Can this be PG-13? Is this allowed?
This is whatever we decide we want it to fucking
PG-13. Be. PG-13, are you new?
Yeah,
here?
We've hit X-rated plenty in years past.
Okay, all right. So I found out that there's this pack called Back to Work, and if I purchase that pack, I can then use mods to create a strip club, all right? So I get the strip club going, and then in the back of the strip club, I can run a drug cartel. And then in the basement, all the people that owe the drug cartel money, I can use to feed my vampires in the basement. So I'm thinking.
Oh my God.
This is what I want to do.
Oh, I'm loving this. Keep going.
I'm sad Michael's not here to just squeal and glee at this. Because he would.
It's his fault. His fault. You had to go out to eat.
That many steps because the people don't like it. The town folk don't like it when I just grab random Sims and feed on them. So this all needs to be done like with good reason and slowly. And the only way to, you know, weed out the ones that deserve to be fed on until they're dead is drug cartel.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Knowing you, what, none of this shocks me, though. That's the problem. This
I'm
is
not
just
even
par
fazed
for the
by
course
this. I know
love.
You guys are like all like, oh.
No, I'm not shocked. It's more just like, I love this. Keep going. Like, just keep, tell me more. I am thoroughly invested.
Zoe, I feel like you're about two steps away from roping them into playing fucking werewolf.
There's a werewolf.
No, I actually just joined a vampire game, so they could join that too. What? Come at me, bro.
I'm just saying, it's bound to happen at this point. So, dear, what have you been playing?
You know what I've been playing, and I feel like the audience is going to get tired of me talking about it, but Darksiders, because that's what I'm on. I'm pretty deep now into Darksiders 2. And while, yes, I have adjusted now to Death's mechanics, I don't like them. Like, he's got way more of, like, a Prince of Persia kind of feel. Like, you know, hopping and climbing and parkouring his way through fucking life, and I'm like,
he's more nimble and agile.
Yeah, and I'm like, I want to be a beat stick again. Like, that's one of the, like, okay, so cool thing about War, not only could his, like, dodge, you know, just move the fuck out of the way, it also had an ability where if you shot it at an opponent, it would knock them back and cause damage, and that was fucking useful. And
it took forever and I finally got it. But for the longest time, there was no like parrying ability. And I'm like, is this dude just incapable or like what the fuck? But I just got one and it's like, yeah, no, now if you, you know, dodge carefully, a basically like form of death will cause damage. And I'm just like, it shouldn't take this long into the fucking game. Like, because I looked at the walkthrough, I think I'm like halfway through the fucking game. And that's how long it took to get a fucking parry move. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's the stupidest shit ever. And like, and then the story isn't even as interesting as the first one. Like, it's literally falling into the like the whole rule about sequels and that sequels like suck. And I get that they wanted every single one to be different, and I really fucking get that, but I'm like, you can't follow up War with this. Like, I'm sorry, but like, War seems it like his journey just seemed a lot more interesting, and you're more invested because he was fucked over, and you're trying to get to this like whodunit kind of fucking mystery, and it is more compelling. Where this, Death is just trying to clear War's name by bringing back humanity, and then he gets to do all these tasks for these other people in order to get what he wants. Like, he's like, hey, I need your guys' help with this. Well, first you gotta go do this. Oh, well, to go do this task, you gotta first go do this. And then to do this task, you gotta first go do this. Like, it's just so... Like, I'm gonna play it, and I'm gonna finish it. I plan on rolling credits on it, because it's part of the series, and I will see it through. But, like... Right now, my biggest disappointment is the story, because I just don't give a fuck.
Now, for more on how to do a sequel right, see our recent episode, Anatomy of a Sequel.
And I just don't care. Like, there was this whole thing in the beginning where, like, all these souls of other Nephilim that, like, Death killed, it got stuck in his chest. And I was like, are we gonna fucking acknowledge that? What are we getting to that? Like... This happened, like, the beginning. I was like, oh, well, fuck, there's this huge thing. But it doesn't seem to be affecting him, you know? Like, his whole mission is for something else. It does not really, like... The Death could literally just go, like, nah, I don't give a fuck. And it wouldn't really matter, you know? Like, other than saving War. And I'm like, considering you've already played as War, and he kind of fixed his own shit, I don't care anymore.
This is where I wish Michael...
Like,
right.
I don't care anymore, because I'm like, I know it's gonna be okay. Like, I know War's gonna be fine.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, the end of the first game, like, War's got some beef with the fucking
War's
council.
War's not gonna be fine. Yeah. Right.
I mean, he's not fine as in, like, totality, but as far as, like, trying to clear his name and that he didn't do shit wrong, you realize he kinda, in a way, cleared his own name, because... He got fucked over, but now everybody knows that he got fucked over.
Right.
So, like, clearing his name was never a thing that they were planning on happened, because they knew it wasn't him in the first place. But now that everybody knows, you know, it's not as bad. So knowing that War is fine and this no longer matters, I don't care about Death's mission. I don't. And that's making it really hard to, like, stay engaged with the story. Like, when I was playing the other one, Raul would come to me and he'd be, like, trying to talk to me. And I'm like, shh, I got the big bad going on. Like, I can't concentrate on you right now. And now, like, if I'm fighting some big monster dude, I just hit pause and I'm like, hey, what do you want? Like, I don't care. And that's what's killing me right now. Sorry, went on a whole fucking tangent, but... That's what I've been playing, and that's how I feel about it. Like I said, I will roll credits, but I cannot wait to be done with this game.
It's valid. So, LeGrew, what have you been spinning in your disc tray?
So, I have not been doing much. I've actually been... I did start Final Fantasy VII, not Rebirth, Final Fantasy VII Intergrade. My PS5. So,
one is Intergrade now?
Okay, so that's Final Fantasy VII, the remake. and that is the expansion, like the DLC for the remake. So I played it up to the point where I can actually start. It's Integrate, which if you're a Final Fantasy VII nut, it is the before the game kind of goes to the overworld in the original. So it's just kind of like giving up that little bit of content before Final Fantasy VII Remake ends and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth begins. So I'm playing that. But I had to play the whole game over to get to that point. So I've been working on it for a little bit. So that's just what I've been doing. And then after that, I have not been doing much for gaming because work has been pulling me all sorts of directions this week, which I don't enjoy, to be honest with you.
I know that feeling.
Yep, but it's just the way it works. So I got that. I'm playing that. I'm really into that right now. I don't think it's going to take that much time. And I'm not sure if I'm going to go to Rebirth right away or am I going to just play a backlog game and then wait. I might need, the way I work is I might need a little bit of space in between the big RPGs, right? So I might
need. Yeah, you need a palate cleanser.
Yeah, I might need something to do, you know, something to have, you know, hey, could I finally play God of War Ragnarok that I have two collector's editions for, you know? Maybe I should play one of that game, right? Or should I just, like, play something else? And it's coming. I just not really sure what yet. I'll know when I get there. I'm kind of that kind of, like, the way
you'll probably bounce off a dozen games until one of them grabs you.
That's pretty much what I do. I just like, oh, same. Play this. Nope. And I know I don't want a big game, but I also know I don't want like this game, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll bounce off a lot of shit, I'm sure. But right now, that's what I'm doing. I'm just kind of finishing it up. I hope to finish that up in the next day or two.
Okay. Let's see. I've mostly been playing IRL Sims, which involves making sure the house doesn't burn down, trying to keep the place in order, fixing appliances, which we were doing earlier today. I don't think I've actually really gotten to fucking play anything this week, truth be told. It was only yesterday that I hooked up one of the docks for the Switch again in the house after the fundraiser tournament last weekend. That's all still just been sitting on the dining room table until yesterday. I've still got to get the rest of that put away, but that's a whole different thing. But yeah, it's, I want to poke at Control, but I've got to be in the right headspace for that to at least try and muddle further until I start hitting a groove with it. But I mean, we talked about that last week, you know, it's so hard to hit a groove with Control.
So, curiosity, how far are you into the game?
I just got the telekinesis power.
Okay, so you're just getting there. Okay.
Yeah. So
I think you're going to like it. I know you're not really as much into it as I am, but
I like it. I'm just having problems hitting a groove where I can stay playing it for long sessions.
I get that. I think after the telekinesis power, and the game starts, and you just kind of like put some of the idiosyncrasies of the game away. Like, you're like, oh, this is the way it works. Like, once you get that point, I think you're going to really like it.
Probably. I'm not denying it. Like I said, I enjoy what's there. I like the story. The story's got everything in it that interests me. It's just the gameplay, the world, the fucking layout, the map, and the lack of like any sort of waypoint system is really irritating, and it makes it hard for me to latch on.
I understand that. Yep.
That's my problem here. And I'm sure the more I play it, it will eventually hit its groove, and I'll,
You're playing this on Series X?
Yeah.
Okay. So I played this on the One X, mm-hmm. and I'm just letting you know that that was harder because of the load time. So I'm at least glad that you're getting this faster load times.
Yeah. The fancy upgrade edition just hit Game Pass actually.
Oh, did it? Okay.
It did. So that's a thing. I don't know if I can like access that and keep my save file though?
I think you can actually.
So, because I just bought the standard edition on sale a few weeks ago, like a month ago, for like $8. But
The ultimate edition is on Game Pass, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So
like Game Pass ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can access it, but I honestly don't.
I just don't know if my save will transfer over, and exactly I can just
I don't
keep
know
going. Because I'm not gonna lie, I don't want to fucking redo that beginning again.
No, but I'll tell you.
I also think part of my problem too is that we've got the big pretty 4K TV upstairs in the bedroom, and I'm usually playing during the day, and it catches a fucking nasty glare because idiot cat tore up the blinds and all this shit. Yeah, it's not even that it's dark. It's honestly pretty bright. Like the red and the white does such a washout job on everything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
and right. Then you stack a glare on top of that, it's very difficult.
No, now,
ironically, that white and red color scheme, I can play up there in the middle of the day with the windows open with super hot without a problem. But Control has a lot more nuance to its visual than the stark contrast that Super Hot does.
Yeah.
No. Which reminds me, I need to finish playing Super Hot VR so I can get the rest of the story. Because if anybody's ever played Super Hot and you've not played the VR version and you get the chance, play it, because it is not the same game in VR. It's actually the other half of Superhot's story. They're two separate stories that hook together.
Right.
So there's a fucking cool thing for you. And I do want to fucking finish that. That, and I've had a urge to get back into playing some Pistol Whip. And I've kind of just been wanting to crack out the Oculus again. Not to mention too, Beat Saber just got a shockingly just now DLC pack of Daft Punk music. And I saw that and I'm like, wait a minute, how did it take this long? Like, now that they're not even fucking together anymore?
That's the way it works.
Right. There's definitely a few in there that I'm shocked are in Beat Saber's roster, but which is because Beat Saber honestly has a lot of like deep cuts in it too, not just the poppy stuff. So I mean, honestly, I'm a little stunned that like Ministry of Sound doesn't have not the band, like the whole like group organization that does like Trance Nation and all that stuff. You know, that they don't have their own fucking big $40 DLC pack with a billion songs in it, because that's 100% right up their alley. Like, holy shit.
Dude,
you know.
I swear to God, if Odessa put something on Beat Saber,
I would love. They've got some great. I don't think all of their stuff would be a good fit, but a lot of it would.
Yeah. So, like, I agree with that. Not
Behind
everything,
the Sun would be awesome.
It would, considering there's, like, a huge, like, you know, drum section for it. So do I think everything would fit? No. But there's also songs on there where, like, you might be doing the beat to, like, the words that are there rather than necessarily grabbing the beat. Like, not everything that I've played on Beat Saber. I have played, like, some songs where, you know, they don't have heavy beats, but like they're still fun to play. So
yeah, I mean, as long as the rhythm's there. But and honestly, like Odessa, it'd be really cool if they did something like what Guitar Hero did with Tool, where just the Tool songs in Guitar Hero had like special background visuals that were all like Tool artwork.
Dude, could you imagine laser lights while you were playing fucking Beat Saber? Ah!
Just the whole visual thing that they do on screen at their shows for those songs would be great. So, like, that'd be a really fucking cool dip. So, that's, I don't know. But no, I've had an itch, honestly, to get out the Oculus again and start fussing with it. And with the weather starting to get nice, it'd be kind of neat to be able to, you know, go play out on the back porch in the nice weather. Pistol Whip has been calling my name again. That and I I really do want to need to finish The Climb so I can justify getting the sequel, because the sequel looks awesome. The sequel has a lot of like original Mirror's Edge vibe to it that I like. So, but I say Zoe got to play The Climb for just about the first time, I think, a couple weeks ago. And yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Like, you're not holding your own body weight, but Jesus, by the time you're done playing it for an hour, you felt like you have been. And it's, I swear to it's God, really it cool. It's pretty like too.
Climbing.
It's a really well done game. It's a great piece of software. I enjoy it thoroughly. So, but yeah, I mean, if you want more on VR, you know, LeGru and I had an old episode a while back, you know, breaking the VR glass ceiling. It's well worth a listen to, about why VR just hasn't managed to crack the mainstream and how to fix the issue. But again, you know, nobody listens to us. God forbid we might know what we're talking about. Who knows?
Yeah, actually, but users of product.
Go fucking figure. Huh. Right. So, anyways. But yeah, that's it. That's what I've been playing. So let's take a minute before the break here and shout out our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game with fragrances and scents for guys, gals, and non-binary pals. This week I've been dipping into my Memoirs of a Trespasser. It's reminiscent of my favorite City on Fire, just a little more mellowed out. Really, really good. Always gets a great response. And again, too, not just fragrances, perfumes, colognes, but also check out their scented oils, candles, and bar soaps. All awesome. Bar soap, awesome. One of the best cleans I've gotten in the shower in a long, long while. Cannot recommend enough. But yeah, check them out. Link in the show notes down below. That's Imaginary Authors. And let's hit the break! And we're back with the third half of the show this week. We are taking a dive down the warp pipe.
Oh, wow. Love these pipes.
And we're looking at the recent early year layoffs throughout the industry, as well as what this might mean in terms of the shape of the industry and the medium that we consume, how it may shape and change that, and what, if anything, can and or should be done to stem the bleeding. So for anybody that's been not keeping track, already in 2024, we've had PlayStation, EA, and Microsoft, all with big swaths of layoffs. And the general public reaction has not been great. It's been very much the fuck, quit fucking over developers that, you know, come in every day for years, work on your product, and then you show them the door as soon as you make a dime off of it. But let's dig in. Let's start with do we think that this can be stopped, or is this just a product of the time in our industry? Who wants to jump in?
So my biggest thing on if, you know, all those layoffs can be stopped, a big part of it's just questioning, like, how much are people going to value long-term investments over short-term gains, right? Because you look at, like, what's happening more so than anything else, I'm pretty sure, is all these layoffs that you're hearing about in the industry are basically, they're like, I heard this company laid off 100 people and it caused them to save $100,000. So if we lay off 200 people, we can save $200,000. And so it's all copycat layoffs are very much a real thing. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing more than anything else. People are just like, oh, okay, where's this fat that we can trim, while realizing, without realizing, there's actually very little quote unquote fat in just trimming what they can.
Yeah.
Michael?
I just like the concept that a lot of these companies are basically laying off, you know, the people who actually do things that matter for their company, and then at the same time claiming, hey, we made record profits.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Like, someone needs beat up for that shit publicly.
Like, I'm not saying that any of the layoffs that are going on are justifiable at all, but if you look at Sony specifically, Insomniac got hit with this wave of layoffs just months after Spider-Man 2 came out, a game which has sold over 10 million copies to date, had the biggest 24-hour launch of any Sony-published game, and the fact that they... I'm not saying that anyone should have lost their jobs, but you would think at the very least, if you worked for a studio that made them that much money, your job would probably be safe. Mm-hmm. But no. And this isn't so much video games dealing with, but when Hasbro had their big thing of layoffs, it was Wizards of the Coast was the only portion of Hasbro that was profitable with Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. Regardless of what you think of the business decisions that they've been making, they've been making Hasbro money.
They're still making money.
And they got affected by the layoffs, and the current Hasbro CEO used to be in charge of Wizards of the Coast, so if anything, he would be biased in their favor. And the fact that he's still laying them off after they made them profits and he used to work for them just really goes to show no one is safe.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, you want to weigh in here?
Honestly, I don't think I could say anything that they already haven't. I mean, we're in the stage of like late stage capitalism where it's very common to see that the working people get screwed over, and you know, everyone's, you know, people at the top are making money, but we're not seeing anything on our end with that money. And much like Wes said, for those companies, like right now, to be doing well and for them to lay off a bunch of people after they've made a whole bunch of money makes no sense. Other than they just want more money. I mean, it just, you know, considering how much these companies make, part of me really just wants them to come out and say something. I'm like, where's the justification, if you have any, for this many layoffs? Like, what is the point? Like, I need some sort of reasoning behind this that is more than greed, because right now that's all it seems like, is they just want more and more money, even though they just made a fuck ton, and that makes no sense to me.
The only one I could even remotely think is anywhere close to justifiable or reasonable was Microsoft with the Activision Blizzard King, because that's two massive entities coming together, and I can imagine that there's probably at least a decent, if not a substantial amount of redundancy that they're hunting down in the process.
Correct.
But that's the only one. But the rest of these... And it's happened so often in the last 10 years or so, where, you know, game comes out, game does well, studio devs get fucked.
And there's only so much you can justify with that merger, with the redundancy. Mm-hmm. And like, I'd say I hate to be political, but you can't talk about this without getting a little bit political. Because, like, I know in the EU and a lot of European countries, if you're about to be laid off because of redundancy, they require you to get at least so much notice. But right. Here in the United States, you know, because at-will employment and right to work is so prevalent, you know, you mm-hmm. don't get that same kind of decency. They say technically, because it's at-will or right to work, you can leave whenever you want. Ooh, look at that perk. But, you know, you'll find that most people don't really want to leave their jobs until they know for a fact they can find a better one. And so the power imbalance, just because you technically can leave whenever you want, the amount of people who that benefits is so far and few between. So it's kind of like I said in the group chat when we were talking about all these layoffs. I don't know if I'm ready to outright call myself a socialist. I feel comfortable saying I'm left by American standards, but you know, when you have people calling Joe Biden of all people a radical socialist, that doesn't say much. But every time we read another one of these headlines, that's like giant company that produced record profits lays off staff, I just inch a little bit closer to saying, to getting to the point where I do feel comfortable saying that.
So here's the big speculative question, though. I think this is where the real meat of the conversation is. How do you see this shaping the industry and the medium going forward, assuming that this pattern will probably still continue?
So I feel like a lot of the times we keep hearing people say, like, we're going to see a rise in indie games because of this or because of that. This is the one where, not the one, but one of those times where I actually do think it's going to happen, because after
that's where my thought process has been this week.
After Microsoft and Activision Blizzard King laid off a bunch of workers, not all of which were redundant, Toys for Bob announced that they were going to become an indie studio. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, the greedy person in me is like, darn it, I really want them to make a Banjo-Kazooie game. But the other, the human being in me, was like, good for them. Because they had to, was it their UK office that got completely shut down? It was one office I know that is just completely gone.
Yeah. And like I said, that's kind of where my thought process has been. So I've been thinking on it more and probably a little more down the line. But we'll get there. Zoe? You want to toss in here? What do you think this is going to do to the landscape for gaming, assuming that the success followed by the layoff wave pattern continues? I don't have your sound.
There we go. Sorry, switch on my headphones was off. Part of me wonders about what it's going to do to quality of games, because I feel like when you're in the game business and all you care about is making money, I feel like you care less about the quality and just, hey, is this going to make me a buck, rather than putting out something that's actually, you know, a really good game. And I don't know, like, I just feel like even us as consumers are just getting tired of the gaming industry as a whole, but I also just think we're getting tired of, you know, capitalism as a whole. And if how anything is showing in like other areas of this, where, you know, there are people that are just up and leaving places, you know, without that 2-week notice, where like in this industry, I know you can, but like, people are just starting to like really not give a shit about who they work for. I mean, can you imagine being someone that still works for these companies and knowing just at like any moment, because they fucking feel like it, you can just be out the door, even if you did a good job, even if you did well? There is no reward for doing well. So I worry about game quality because, you know, up tops just care about making money, and then the people that are still working there, I worry about, you know, morale and what that's going to do to them working on their product. So my biggest thing is just quality of games, but also, are, you know, how often are we going to like see new games? What are we going to like see from that when you're laying so many people off?
One thing you kind of reminded me of is one thing I think we're going to have to start doing is, rather than following what studios are making game is are making games, is following what creators are making games, right? So like, for example, if you are anyone who's in the digital TCG scene, Marvel Snap seems like it came out of nowhere and just blew up and got huge. That's because the guy who's in charge of that made basically was the creative director of Hearthstone. Like, everything people like about Hearthstone, that's him. And so he made Marvel Snap, and he was like, listen, I'm not at the behold of Activision Blizzard King anymore. If you're going to, I'm going to make this game completely free to play friendly. If you want to invest money in the game, you can get better looking cards, but you'll be just as competitively viable if you don't put in a cent.
Yeah, that's a big piece of the appeal. It's well designed. It's a lot of fun. Michael, if you haven't piddled with it, you may enjoy it.
And so,
I'm not a fan of card games generally.
Yeah, but the idea there is that
it's a card game, but it's a very light card game.
It's kind of like how people are now following Kojima Studios rather than Konami after he had his public departure. Now that we're having all of these layoffs, we're going to have to start saying, like, okay, what did you work on before this? Because we now don't know for sure. We can't just say, oh, Insomniac made Spider-Man 2, and I love that game. But they laid off half the staff who worked. I don't know how much of the staff actually worked on it that got laid off. But like, if they laid off like a quarter or a half of the people who did that, and they go off and they make their own cool little Daredevil game, for example, well, we'll go play that instead, or something along those lines. So I'm thinking another thing we're going to start seeing is the rise of more names with the game. Then you kind of made me think about that, Zoe, to also bring that up.
Like I said, for what it's worth, kind of where my head's been at on the subject, a lot of it we've already talked about, but my brain keeps going further down the line, and it almost ends with us right back where we are now. It'll become cyclical. My brain says, one, yes, we will probably start to see the rise of the auteur in gaming. You know, we've gotten hints of that over the decades, and definitely a little more of it in recent years. You know, things like, or people like Will Wright, Sid Meier, and then, you know, in the last 10 years or so, we've definitely seen a lot more of paying attention to an individual's project. Lucas Pope, who did Papers, Please and Return of the Obra Dinn. The person's name escapes me, but the individual that went from doing Donut County to Neon White, it's like, yeah, you know, now people are starting to pay attention to the individual driving creative force behind a game, much like we do with authors and, to a slightly lesser extent, filmmakers. So,
Ben Esposito was his name, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I knew it. I was blanking on it. But in any case, that said, I think from there, and if you follow me here, the smart people know exactly how we get there or get back to where we are right now, is that from there, I think we will start to see one of two things happen. Either these individual auteurs start collabing and working together and eventually merging into their joint studios, or you start to see smaller publishers pop up that would maybe be in the single to double A kind of tier, if you will, for lack of a better way to put it, and snapping up some of these individual creators and giving them more funding to work with. Eventually it does well, it grows, and we're right back to AAA, and then they start working on figuring out how much of a successful product they can almost automate by duplication to churn out every couple of years or so, and then we're right back where we started, and the cycle starts all over again in another 20-30 years. But that's my grim outlook. But the silver lining there, and I think we're starting to see some of it a little bit already, because you know, that's where some of these great indies come from, is they were at a large studio, had a passion project, and went for it. And like so I, thanks. You did get Bloodstained though, so.
I did. And Bloodstained was actually a lot better than I was expecting it to be.
Mm-hmm. So, but I do think the silver lining is that we're going to have a period of 7 to 12, maybe 13 years, if we're being generous, of as great as indie gaming has been in the last 10 years, I think we will hit the next golden age of indie in that window. And God, I'm looking forward to it. Sad knowing that it'll probably mean that we loop back around again? Yeah. But man, we're going to get some really good stuff out of it for a while.
One thing I will say, it's kind of a response to the Mighty Number 9 claim, is I don't think we should let a rough start, once you've lost your AAA backing, inherently mean you can't do better.
I was just making a stupid joke. Like, mm-hmm. Mighty Number 9 was disappointing, but at the same time, I would still buy anything he did because of his previous track record.
Right, and on top of that, like, some studios are off to a rough start once they go indie, but then improve. Like, if you played the original Yooka-Laylee and then Yooka-Laylee the Impossible Door, like, there is a big leap in quality between those two.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have a lot of studios might have these growing pains, and I think we just need to, like, keep in mind, don't instantly say the first attempt was bad, I won't pay attention to you going that point forward. And I know you were just joking. I just kind of want, like, not let anyone get the wrong impression there.
Fair enough.
You know what I think is really interesting here, just on that note, is that the Mighty Number 9 joke persists for so long. But the irony is that Mighty Number 9 has kind of almost been the exception to the rule, where there haven't been that many Kickstarter, you know, indie projects like that have bombed that hard.
Right.
So
I know Undertale was a Kickstarter backed project. I believe Omori was as well. That one, it's not quite as big a name as Undertale, but still
has its fan base. What's the second one you said?
Omori.
I've never heard of that one.
I got some interesting stuff on it. I can send you.
I've seen it.
Yeah, it's the one that Daryl did the video about, the it's
isn't
the very
it the one
unsettling
where, like, you're
one
in, like, two different, like, worlds kinda?
Yeah.
That's the one we saw at Best Buy, and we looked it up, and I was just like, what the fuck is this game?
It's got, like, a pencil drawn aesthetic on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You might have a solid interest in it, Michael. Like I said, I'll send you the thing on it. So, but do we think there's a way to stop the bleeding? I think might be the most pertinent question, or the most immediate question, though. Is there a way to, as consumers, to stop the bleeding here? As it's happening, or are we just resorting to no ethical consumption under capitalism?
So, as consumers, it's the closest thing that we can do, I mean, is not buy games that, you know, are published by these studios. And someone's going to make the argument, oh, well, then they're really going to lose their job because they're not making money. Well, they're losing their job when the studios do make money anyway. So why reward bad practices?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we could do that. Unfortunately, though, like, part of the reality is, like, if we are going to make gaming like a prime hobby of ours or primary hobby, yeah. like you're going to keep consuming these, and there's going to be games that, you know, you're going to say, hey, I really, really want this. And I'm guilty of it too. I'm going to be honest. Whereas like, this game looks so cool, I'm going to play it, buy it. And then it's not until after I've bought it that I hear about all the scummy practices the company's done. Or, and I'm guilty of this. I'm sure I won't buy this game at full price, but maybe on sale or on Game Pass or something mm-hmm. like that. They still made money off of that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just admitting I'm a bad person, but I didn't mean to interrupt you, Zoe.
No, you're okay. I thought you were done. That's the only reason I started talking. So you're good.
I was going to toss it to Michael because he was piping in there.
No, that's what ended up happening with me with Phoenix Rising. I didn't realize what a horrible, horrible company Ubisoft was. And I really enjoyed Phoenix Rising, mainly because it's a blatant Breath of the Wild ripoff.
Yeah.
But it was still a lot of fun and really well done. And then, as I said, I started to uncover, like, Ubisoft is a terrible, terrible company, and I don't appreciate a lot of their business practices and things like that. I felt kind of horrible for handing them money when I bought that, but...
Right. I mean, there's a reason why the phrase "there's no ethical consumption under capitalism" is a phrase, because these companies know you're going to keep buying from us, because they will put out that one game where you're like, fuck, it just looks amazing, I have to play it, like you just do. And I think it's just up to the individual where they put that line. I didn't buy it, but I really wanted to, and it was more just because of financial reasons, not because of the other shit behind it, but, like, I really liked Diablo, and when Diablo 4 came out, I wanted that shit so hard. Had I had the money, probably would have bought it. Activision Blizzard is a terrible fucking company, but I would have fucking bought the game, and so, yeah, I wouldn't have drawn my line there, but, like, for me, I refused to buy the Harry Potter game when it came out, and... I am a diehard Harry Potter fan. Like, since I was a kid, I read all the books as they were coming out. I have tattoos on me for it. Like, I love Harry Potter. And I'm like, you just got to decide where you're going to make those cuts. Like, because in this day and age, if you only bought things, like, only from companies that weren't shit bags, you'd have a very small margin, in my opinion. Like, these companies are big and know that you will go to them no matter what. I'm like, who the fuck here does not shop at Walmart? They're a fucking terrible fucking company and how they run their shit, but we all still go and shop there. I mean, they're like that for a reason, because they know we're not going to stop. And I might be the pessimist here, but part of me is just like, at the end of the day, I don't think we as consumers can do anything. I mean, we can, like, raise our voices and, you know, we can try and pull, like, a fucking Sonic where we bullied the fucking studio so hard they remade what he looked like. Like, we can try that, but there's no guarantee that's gonna work. These companies really don't have any incentive to do it, because they know we're gonna fucking buy their shit anyway. I'm just like, like I said, I don't know if I'm the pessimist, but I'm just like, looking at just everything, I'm just like, they don't really have a reason to quit. I mean, they just made a fuck ton of money and laid people off, and they'll make more shit tons of money and still do whatever they want, because they have the power and they can. I mean, ultimately, it's up to them to not be shit people.
And I'd also argue on your behalf, or along with you, Zoe. So, like, this is partially in agreement and adding on to it. Like, you could try to spread the message of these companies doing bad stuff all you want. There are going to be people who just say, I don't care. Right? Like, look how many people still bought Hogwarts Legacy despite how problematic not just JK Rowling but the story of the game itself is. Like, imagine
that, honestly, that's what drove me not to buy it initially. I was like, JK Rowling, and then I heard the plot and I was like, nah, get fucked.
Yeah, so okay, I need to know what that is. I haven't heard this part.
Okay.
Oh, the game has a pro-slavery message.
Are you serious?
So in Harry Potter history, like,
I really wish I could have seen your face, Michael, for that.
It's part of the, like, I don't want to say genre. What am I thinking of? It's part of the, like, history.
Lore.
There you go. It's already part of the lore that this was a thing. It's just now in a game. So there was something called the Goblin Uprising. And basically, it was the goblin saying, hey, we don't like being treated like second-class citizens. And you find out that basically, like, because if you think about it, humans are not the strongest magically. There are so many magical creatures. And they basically just squash them all so they can stay in power. But this specifically was the goblins being like, fuck your shit. This is not cool. And the, you know, Death Eaters and shit ended up helping them with it. So they just got roped into, like, well, they're evil because the Death Eaters are helping them. And what they want is evil. So you literally have to put down this uprising. And all they want is to be treated equally. And that's... And so when I heard that, I'm like, you want me to actively oppress people in a video game? Like, there are so many other stories you could have fucking done and picked. You could have made up a Harry Potter story and it would have been fine. And I'm like, I was even fine with the fact that you could fucking death curse people and kill them. Like, I was okay with that, okay? But, like, you want me, as part of the plot that is driving my playing of this game, to be actively oppressing people. Like, get fucked.
Goddamn.
And so... Not that you're wrong about that, but getting back to what I was saying.
Yeah.
So, like, imagine telling people who, like, all their gaming that they do, like, there are people who only buy the new Call of Duty, only buy the new EA Sports game for the sports that they like, only buy comic book games because they like Spider-Man or whatever. There are kids who only buy Pokemon. Imagine trying to convince them and having to be on your moral high ground and be on your soapbox and be like, you can't buy this game because this company is screwing over its employees. There are a lot of people who are just going to tell you, I don't care. I don't care that EA laid everyone off. I like football. I want to play Madden. I don't like that. So I don't care that Sony laid everyone off. I like Spider-Man. I'm going to play the new Spider-Man game. And granted, this wasn't a layoff one, but I don't care that Game Freak put literally zero effort into making the new Pokemon games. I'm 7 years old. I'm going to ask my parents for it anyway.
Can you imagine
being a parent and, like, because you got to think, a seven-year-old has no idea that this shit is happening. But, like, you as an adult, you know. And so I'm like, your kid's asking you for this thing
now
that is problematic. And so you're in the middle of, like, do I make my kid happy or do I stand by my goddamn values? And depending on the age of the kid, it's not like you can tell them, oh, well, they're a shit company, so we're not buying you that game. A seven-year-old doesn't fucking care about that.
Right.
Honestly, I was just about to say, I'm sitting here playing it in my head thinking, how would I explain this to Liv, and how would she take it? And I feel like it's doable depending on the child, for one.
Okay.
But I do think it's doable. Like, in my head, I'm sitting here thinking, Liv wants something that's made by a shit-awful company that I refuse to, you know, hand my money over to. And it'd be a case of, you know, letting her know, it's like, look, honey, I know you really want it, but the people that make it are not good people, and they do things that we don't want to give them money for, to let them keep being not good people. So instead of this, how about we find you something similar, and we'll do that, and maybe we'll even find something better. You'll be surprised.
And so
I'm pretty sure that Liv would maybe have a little bit of feels, but I think if I laid it out to my 7, almost 8-year-old like that, she would probably be okay.
I would say I've done that. So I've told my kids, because I've done it at times, that if they, like, brought me money, I'd go and, like, pick them up lunch. I'm like, it's not happening every day. But, you know, and one of them was like, yo, I want Chick-fil-A. And I'm like, I'm not going to Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care that this isn't even my money. I'm not going to Chick-fil-A. And I, they, you know, of course asked why. And I said, I don't support what the people that own Chick-fil-A do. So I don't go there. And that was it.
Yeah.
And they understood and immediately picked something else for the life of me. I can't remember what the other thing they picked was, but they were like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this instead.
And while I get that, another big problem with depending on the parents to know if the company is good is parents don't always share hobbies with their kids, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you are a gaming parent, so you can be informed on that decision, but parents need their own hobbies, and they can't realistically be informed on every single aspect of everything their child wants.
No, agreed. I'm just saying, it's, you know, it's something that when that awareness is there, you know, don't ignore it.
Oh, so. Yeah. But yeah, this isn't me faulting you, because if anything, I'm applauding you for being the kind of parent who can do that, you know? But yeah. Long story short, I think shit's fucked for now. Hate to say it.
So, I do think that there is a, like I said, I think part of the silver lining here, though, is that at least for us, the people that buy and play the games, that the alternatives are going to get a lot better and more abundant in the coming years. It's probably going to take a little bit of time to get there, but I think it'll get there, and I think that those of us that are informed, you know, should, I don't think we should get preachy about it, but I do think we should help encourage and maybe help guide those that are, you know, open and willing towards some of those alternatives. You know, you get somebody that's a big Call of Duty person and that's their one game every year kind of thing, be like, hey, look, not identical, but there's a lot here that I think you dig, and, you know, little cleaner conscience. And I think you can apply that to most everything with greater and greater ease in the coming years, is going to be my suspicion. So I think that's the biggest thing. The other is, you know, case of, I'll take Prince of Persia as an example here. You know, yeah, it looks great and I want to play it. I won't buy it new. I'll snap up a used copy, because at that point I'm at least not throwing them any more money. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I did with the Hogwarts game, which I still actually haven't. I still haven't actually played it. Like, it's still like, I bought it, you know, off somebody brand new, like the deluxe version of it. Haven't even pulled the shrink wrap off it yet. Did not know what I learned about it today. So.
I still plan on buying the game. Like, once the plot gets there, I probably won't, but like, I literally just want to run around Hogwarts. And so I keep an eye when we go to like our game resale shop for
secondhand stores. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if it pops up, I'll buy it. And just so, like I said, I can run around Hogwarts, and I'm like, I will ignore the plot for as long as the game will let me, just so I can run around and, you know, be a student at Hogwarts, because I refuse to play the plot. I will not give in.
So,
like, I felt dirty buying it just because of the whole J.K. Rowling thing and what a monster she turned out to be. But, like, as I said, that whole... I was completely unaware of what you just told me, and wow.
Yeah.
So fucked up.
I think the other thing, too, is, you know, in cases where, like, Michael, what you were saying with Phoenix Rising and Ubisoft is a lot of times we see and we find out after the purchase, after it's too late, and the best thing you can do is at that point just take that knowledge and go forward.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in, you know, guilting somebody over something they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as you're willing to make a change going forward.
Agreed. But,
so, but anyways, I think that's a great place to wrap this up. Quick shout out and a thank you to our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors. I want to say thank you to friends and family for coming and hanging out, and thank you to everybody that tuned in and listened this week. You can and should find us on all of your favorite podcatchers, YouTube as well. We're there, and come jump into the Discord and come say hi. And yeah, I think that covers it. Let's say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
You can't see it, but I'm waving.
And yeah, that's it. This has been the World 1-1 Podcast, powered by the World 1-1 Podcast Network. Press start to engage your mind. Peace!